Okay, so we just had a really nice overview of the drug development tool qualification program more generally, and now I'd like to move to our next session in the agenda for an update specifically on the clinical outcome assessment portion of our DDT qualification program. So I'll provide this update, and then I'm happy that Dr. Nancy Klein-Leidy has agreed to be here to share her perspectives on COA qualification. Dr. Leidy is Senior Vice President of Scientific Affairs at Evidera, and as you probably know, she was the lead investigator of the ExactPro, which was the first COA qualified through our qualification program. And then after both of these presentations, we'll have some time for Q&A and some audience discussion and participation. My disclaimer slide, these are my views and do not necessarily represent an official FDA position. So we've had a very busy and productive year. And I'd like to share some of the specific details with you about our qualification activities, some of the new communication tools that we've developed or are in the process of developing, talk about some of the modifications we've made to the time points at which qualification is possible, so that we can help to try to improve the efficiency of instrument development and qualification. And then I will conclude the presentation addressing several of the common questions that we've been receiving. Chavre already mentioned this, but I think it's worth mentioning one more time. We're pleased that our final DDT qualification guidance was published in January of this year. And very shortly after that, as you know, the first COA was qualified. And again, in a few minutes, Dr. Klein-Leidy will share some more details about this process, some of the learnings and her reflections on the ExactPro qualification. So we have quite a number of projects within our clinical outcome assessment qualification program now. We've really seen a swell of submissions over the last year. So you can see, actually there's a typo in this slide, we have 49 projects across the various stages of qualification. 17 of these are in the initiation stage, so that means we're still working with the submitters to understand and evaluate the concept of interest and the context of use that they're proposing, and to make a decision about whether we're able to accept that project into the consultation and advice stage. There are 29 projects that are in the consultation and advice stage currently. That means they've been formally accepted into our program, and 17 of those are actively engaged in seeking our advice and input and moving towards the qualification review. And we're awaiting the submission of the initial briefing package for 12 additional projects. Most of these submissions have been for patient-reported outcome assessments, but we also have a few that have been for clinician-reported outcome assessments, performance-based measures, and then a few that contain multiple elements or different reporters. So we've developed several new tools, communication tools, to try to help organize some of the thinking and activities that might go into instrument development for qualification. We've also updated our DDT and COA websites. We've included on the CO website a roadmap to patient-centered outcome measurement and a revised wheel and spokes diagram, and I'll talk about those in a minute. We're also continuously thinking about ways that we may improve our communication and to be a bit more transparent. So during the Q&A audience participation discussion, if anyone has ideas on communication tools or ways that we can improve our communication, please feel free to share. Or if you're not comfortable sharing in the public forum, catch me at a break and I would be happy to listen and see what we can do to improve our communication. So this is the link to our new updated COA qualification website. The website includes frequently asked questions. It has a table showing the instruments, or for now, the instrument that has been qualified through our program. It also includes a link to the qualification guidance for the ExactPro, and then it also provides links to the CEDAR reviews of the instrument, so you can see exactly what it is we review when we're reviewing these for qualification, and what our thinking is about the instrument. And then, of course, our roadmap and wheel and spokes diagram are included on the website as well. So this is the roadmap diagram on the website. And I apologize, it's probably a little bit difficult to see all of the elements that are listed here. But my intent today is not to walk through all of the details in this roadmap, but just to alert you to its existence on our website and then make a couple of key points about the tool. So first, I know there are a number of elements identified here. So I hope that this diagram is not viewed as just yet another hurdle from the FDA. We really do view this as a way to organize many of the things that instrument developers and drug developers are already thinking about. This just provides one view of how one might embark upon a sound and orderly instrument selection or development pathway. And that begins with thinking about the clinical context in which the instrument is intended to be used. Not all of the elements that are identified in this diagram will be relevant for every situation, and there are elements that may be important for your particular effort that are not included here. But we do hope this diagram can help organize and frame thinking about outcome assessment in clinical trials. A second key message that I hope this tool communicates is whether it's within the context of qualification or within an individual drug development program, is that we have to understand the elements of the disease or condition that might impact outcome assessment before we can conceptualize treatment benefit and then go about selecting or developing an outcome assessment to evaluate that treatment benefit. So often we see people jumping into column 3, selecting or developing an outcome measure, without having given any attention to columns 1 and 2. This can be problematic because it can result in a tool's inability to detect change or detect treatment benefit if it actually exists. And it can create some difficulty in interpreting and or labeling the clinical trial findings. So I also want to share another version of the roadmap. This includes a revision that we're considering making to the roadmap. So I welcome feedback. So we understand that many of our tools are very specific to patient-reported outcome assessments and aren't always applicable to other COAs, like clinician-reported outcome assessments or performance-based measures or observer-reported outcomes. So while we do talk a lot about patient-reported outcome assessments, and we are, of course, always interested in the patient perspective, when we think about patient-focused drug development, that doesn't necessarily mean that a PRO assessment has to be included as an endpoint in every clinical trial to evaluate treatment benefit. It really means that we need to think about what is important to measure in a particular population, so what is clinically meaningful to patients or other stakeholders, and then determine how best to measure it in the clinical trial. So we are looking at ways to better incorporate that idea into this roadmap. And we've tried to make this more applicable to non-PRO assessments, where what you're measuring may not actually be the directly meaningful benefit, but some representation of it. So we've separated one box into two in the conceptualizing treatment benefit column. So at the top of column 2, you now see a suggestion to identify the meaningful health aspect. That is the intended benefit to the patients in their daily lives. That might be walking ability in daily life, for example. The second box in column 2 then suggests we think about what exactly are we going to measure to conclude improved walking ability in our particular context of use. So it might be that we use a PRO assessment to actually ask patients about their daily life walking. Or it may be that we consider a concept like walking speed or performance in the clinic, where we would use a performance measure like the 6-minute walk test to represent walking ability in daily life, but not measure it directly. So the next diagram I would like to share is a slightly revised wheel and spokes diagram from the original that was included in the PRO guidance. This one helps to organize the steps involved in developing or selecting and providing evidence to support the qualification of a clinical outcome assessment. So we view these steps as critical to the goal of qualification, and we also believe that these considerations are helpful in the course of developing or selecting a tool for use in an individual drug development program as well. Because the goal of qualification is to produce instruments that are appropriate across multiple clinical trials within the same context of use. And FDA is recommending the use of these tools across all of these trials. The bar of evidence is sometimes a bit higher for qualification than for tools used in individual drug development programs. But the benefit of going through the qualification process or going through all of these steps in the context of an individual drug development program is to systematically lower the risk that the tool will not be able to detect a treatment benefit in a clinical trial, or not being able to interpret findings from the tool, or not having measured something clinically meaningful in the first place. So Spoke 1 recommends identifying the context of use and the concept of interest. How do you conceptualize treatment benefit? What are you planning to measure, and in whom? Spoke 2 recommends using qualitative research to draft or evaluate item content and document content validity. Spoke 3 recommends doing some cross-sectional evaluation of other measurement properties, so evaluating cross-sectional construct validity and then assessing score reliability, so test, retest, or inter-rater reliability. At this point in the qualification process, the tool can be considered for qualification for use in exploratory studies. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. Spoke 4 recommends the longitudinal evaluation of measurement properties, so assessing the ability to detect change and longitudinal construct validity, as well as understanding how to interpret treatment benefits, so what is meaningful change on the tool. At this point in the qualification program, the tool can be considered for qualification for use as a primary or secondary endpoint to support labeling claims. And then after an instrument is qualified for a particular context of use, the assessment might be considered for other contexts of use, and in some cases we may need to modify the assessment to be appropriate for those new contexts of use. So Spoke 5 is included in the wheel and spokes to account for this potential. So I mentioned 2 points in the wheel and spokes where we could consider a tool for qualification. With the initial qualification, which is qualification for use in exploratory studies, CDER has reviewed the development and initial validation of the tool, and we are confident that it is measuring what it set out to measure. The context of use statement then includes a note that this instrument is qualified for use in exploratory studies. At that point in the qualification process, the tool is made publicly available and may be used more widely in clinical trials. That provides the opportunity to gather more information about the tool, how sensitive it is to detecting change, and to gain a better idea of how to interpret that change. For a drug company thinking about conducting clinical trials early in drug development, what this initial qualification means is that CDER agrees with the content of the instrument, and we're recommending the use of the tool, typically in phase 2, to gather additional information within your own particular development program to have it in hand when you're planning for your phase 3 studies. Qualification for use in exploratory studies does not preclude a sponsor from using the tool in phase 3 studies without first having used it in phase 2. However, a drug sponsor may also elect to use the tool as a primary or secondary endpoint in phase 3 trials right away, but they may incur some additional risk just because they simply haven't, we don't have the additional validation information that helps us interpret, to be sure the instrument can detect change and interpret that change. When longitudinal validation data and guidelines for interpretation of change are available, then CDER would review the tool for qualification for use as a primary or secondary endpoint in phase 3 studies. So while the initial qualification indicates CDER's support of the content of the instrument, the final qualification of the tool allows CDER and sponsors to feel confident that the instrument is well-defined and reliable and is able to detect change, and there is an understanding of what represents meaningful change. Now, using the two-step qualification process is not required. For those instrument developers who have accumulated sufficient evidence for qualification of an instrument for use as a primary or secondary endpoint in phase 3 studies, CDER will review only for the second, the final qualification. For those instrument developers who are earlier in development, The two-step process is a recommended approach, as each qualification step increasingly lowers the risk of the use of the instrument in clinical development programs and may help to speed the accumulation of information that will be useful to support the full qualification, the final qualification. So we have, we've received a number of questions about qualifications, so I wanted to take this opportunity to try to answer some of those here. And again, during the Q&A, if there are some that I haven't addressed here, please feel free to ask. So is qualification required in order to use an instrument in a clinical trial? No. We only have one qualified tool, so of course that can't be true. A tool that's not formally qualified should just be discussed with the review division within the IND, and that's a practice that I think everyone is used to. And of course, we do recommend always discussing as early as possible. Are sponsors required to use only qualified instruments? No. While we believe that there are benefits of using a qualified tool, sponsors are free to select whatever tool they believe will be best suited to their particular clinical trial, and then again, just discuss these decisions with the review division. So an instrument has been used to support claims and labeling. Does this mean the tool is qualified? No. Only tools that have been reviewed through the formal DDT qualification process, about which a positive qualification decision has been made, and are made publicly available, are considered qualified. Tools that have not been formally qualified, though, may still be acceptable for use. So what does the qualification review team look like? It's made up of representatives across CDER, and in some cases, when appropriate, it includes participants from other centers, so CDRH or CBER. From CDER, the qualification review team always includes representatives from SEALD, the appropriate review division or divisions, and biostatistics. All consultation and advice, as well as qualification decisions, are made jointly with input from all QRT members. How do FDA and EMA work together on COA qualification? Well, in cases where we know that tools have been submitted to both agencies, we discuss these submissions during regularly, generally quarterly calls, or during additional calls as needed. In addition, FDA and EMA invite each other to participate in joint discussions with the submitters of the clinical outcome assessment. In some cases, we are active participants on each other's calls, and other times we are observers only so that we may stay aware of the issues that are being discussed. FDA and EMA share advice and response letters with one another. So while each agency makes their own qualification decisions and offers their own advice letters to submitters, we do try to harmonize to the fullest extent possible. While we may not always agree completely, we do try to take steps to avoid situations where our advice would be conflicting. What are some of the benefits of qualification? So for sponsors, improved efficiency. So sponsors can be assured in advance that FDA agrees with the use of the tool. There's reduced risk. These tools are developed with input from multiple stakeholders and scientific minds, with active engagement and input from regulatory reviewers, to increase the likelihood that the instrument will be successful at detecting interpretable treatment benefits that exist. For FDA, reduced review time, and for patients, the whole reason we're all here, improved outcome assessments can allow for better communication of meaningful treatment benefit, and qualified clinical outcome assessments can aid in effective and safe drugs coming to the market more quickly. There haven't been many instruments qualified yet. Are there other benefits of the qualification process? Yes. From what I've seen, the qualification process allows for many different stakeholders to come together and discuss often complex and challenging issues. While the process of instrument development and qualification is sometimes longer than any of us would like, the discussions occurring during the process are so important and help to open lines of communications and build partnerships, both internally at FDA as well as externally. So the process provides a good pathway for sharing learnings, discussing those challenges, and in my opinion, provides benefits above and beyond just a qualified tool at the end of the process. And finally, let me end on a request. Sealed is recruiting, both for a new director as well as reviewers. So if you or someone that you know has an interest, please, please, please forward your CV or their CV to the Sealed Endpoints email address that's shown here. And with that, I'm pleased to turn it over to Nancy to discuss the ExactPro.